So I'm delighted to share that Postnet is sponsoring today's episode. We've actually had them on the pod before, about a year ago, and subsequently I ended up doing a bit of a roadshow for them. You know, I've always loved Postnet because I use them to print Leadership Lab material all the time. But then it really added another layer of affinity for me, getting to know the leadership team and seeing that they just genuinely care about the franchisees, they care about their customers. So it's really great to have them back on the pod.
But their latest thing is really exciting because in order for you to be an applicant that is highly regarded when you're giving a CV to a place to work, it's important to let them know that you're not a criminal in any way. And they've introduced a very affordable 335 Rand criminal check called the Huru criminal check. And they do it while you're waiting, and that gets stamped onto your CV, and that really is helpful in putting you at the top of the CV list when you're looking for work.
Yeah, excellent. So to access that, visit your nearest Postnet store. Postnet, helping you succeed.
I mean, I take my hat off to that guy, eh? What an interesting guy, bro. We're so lucky to be watching him doing what he does.
And what that means, so the math of it is that you have to launch 1,000 starships during a specific planetary alignment window that only opens every 26 months, and each ship has to transport roughly 1,000 passengers. And if he fails to do this, then he doesn't get those shares that are tied to his bonus. But for me, leadership still has to take accountability and responsibility for the narrative that they push. So I think your focus is heavily on the individual.
How do you?
Like you're saying, as individuals, take accountability.
No, but how do you as a lead? I was watching Darius from the CEO of Uber, right? And they were asking him, what do you think about driverless cars? What do you want him to say? Like, what are you expecting him to say? Yes, all our drivers will be null and void in 3 years. He can't say that. He can't say that. He has to keep some level of stability, something. But the truth is, bro, within 2 to 3 years, there's going to be no drivers at Uber.
I don't know if you saw Ferrari's new car that came out this week.
Terrible.
Dude.
Like a dinky car. You know, it looks like a Pinocchio car.
What were they thinking?
That's bad for a Fiat, let alone a Ferrari. Hello and welcome to this week's Expansive Podcast. So good to have you with us again. So much has happened since we were together, Eric. Well, I don't know. What was it? 10 days, 2 weeks ago? So much is going on around the world. So much is changing. So it's going to be a great episode today of just catching up on what the latest ideas are out there and how we can be more expansive when thinking about it. But before we get stuck in this week, just a quick check-in. Eric, what's up, my man? How are you? And how's looking after the dogs without your missus at home?
Yeah, good, man. Yeah, it's been about a week and a little bit now since Dan left for Germany to be with her family. So it's always, you know, I think it's very good for relationships to have this sort of period of isolation, maybe like once or twice a year, because you get so ingrained into each other's lives that to have a bit of distance is actually a good thing. So we've had it for a long time because she's always gone to go visit her family. And this time around, I think it might even be like 2.5-3 weeks. So it's been good from that perspective, actually. And the dogs, dude, just magic. Hey, like, honestly, like I fall more in love with my dogs every single day. And like one of the things that happened was Atlas sleeps on the bed with us every night, but he sleeps at our feet. And since Dan has been away, dude, don't know, like they're just so intuitive. He comes up all the way to the top and then he curls himself up right against my back. Like he doesn't sleep next to me on the bed, like at sort of back level. He curls up against my back with his back. It's like, I'm like, where do you figure out like that I need that or that, you know?
Well, I don't know if it's you that needs that. I think that's how they sleep in packs, right? If you look at them, they're on top of each other and they want to be with their packs. They don't see why they should be separated at any time. That's why they follow you around everywhere because they want to be in the pack. They move in packs.
Yeah.
So yes, they are magical beings, as we all know. And every time I think about them, I see more intelligence. I see more willingness to serve and know very clearly what their mission is. You know, they got such a clear mission about it. And I find it so difficult when they're not respected for that and they're not seen. And for me, you know, everywhere I go, like in America, there's lots of dogs in the airports. And I greet a lot of them. And often the people will say, oh, you're like a dog whisperer. And I always respond with the same thing. I'm not. I see them. They know I respect them. And they come straight to me and they also push their back towards my leg. And it's like, I'm comfortable with you. And so just to see them and recognize them and let them know that they're heard and they're respected. And it's such a loss when people don't see how important that is and how much it means to them, you know. I remember one of my friends had a Belgian police dog, which is a very big, black, curly-haired dog. And the dog was chewing up the house and was a young dog. And the animal communicator said, you haven't given her mission. You must give her mission, a mission to look after the house. And you must give it to her and say it to her. And when she gets a mission, her focus changes. And you realize that they're so willing and hoping that you give them that direction, see them, and just recognize them. You know, I think like any human, like a dog, even a plant, just recognize it, engage with it. Yeah, the older I get, the bigger of a mission I feel it is for me to help more people see it. Because that's all they need.
Yeah,
they just need to be aware of it.
And what I love is I see, obviously, I'm like you, I see lots of dog videos on my feed. And one of my favorite things just to see is how often it is not the person that saves the dog, but the dog that saves the person.
Of course.
And then I was watching a video last night from a guy that he's like a very well-known YouTube influencer. And he adopted a dog. Then 2 days before his wedding, his dog died. And it just came out of nowhere. And it was such an emotional video. He just broke down crying. He couldn't contain himself as he was telling the story of just how, like, when they got the dog, they were still boyfriend and girlfriend, and they were doing okay, but the dog almost helped them grow closer together as a couple. And the reason why they hosted it at this Airbnb for their wedding was because they wanted the dogs to be part of the ceremony. So, like, they just became so integrated. And then, unfortunately, his name was Hondo, passed away just like 2 days before their wedding. But amazing, yeah. Like, I mean, the impact they have on your life is just immeasurable. I told you the other night I was lying awake in bed for an hour, literally thinking about the impact and the lessons that I've learned from the three dogs that I've had.
Yeah.
That's another day's podcast.
And they're so unique, eh? They're just so unique. Yeah. They're so unbelievably unique. You often, you know, I was watching, like, why I wanted a second dog. Have you seen that? They do that sort of like, it's a TikTok like format. They show you the first dog. It's the most beautiful, serene, relaxed, wise dog. So we had to get the second one. It's Tasmanian Devil tearing up
crazy,
everything. Crazy chaos. You're like, hi, sweetheart.
That's
and
so
you know
good.
The best thing I've ever, like, my mom used to always shout at the dogs, and now she's like, dogs never are doing anything maliciously. They're just living. Like, for us to shout at them and tell them to shut up, it's like we don't understand what they're doing. It's like
so foolish.
And it's so foolish, man. It's so ridiculous.
I mean, we are seeing more AI tech as well coming through to help us understand
yes, that's
animals.
Right, the Chinese one.
You posted that collar that's coming out.
Yeah.
Was it a collar? Was a collar?
Yeah, it's a collar with a camera and sound.
Translates
and
barking and yes. So there's that. And then I'm also just seeing, I think it was in the EU, they've now also acknowledged dogs as sentient beings. So they're also getting more rights. And if you've been ever accused of mishandling a dog, you won't be allowed to adopt a dog again. So they're bringing out all these sort of rules, which is great. It's always fun to me when we start the episodes like this, because I think anyone listening to the pod for the very first time and you came here thinking it's purely a business pod, they're like, what the hell is going on here? These guys have been talking about dogs for 6 minutes.
I think we should do a podcast for dogs. That's all we should do. It's much better. I feel so relaxed talking about them.
Before we get into the pod, dude, you are currently in Joburg. You've just spoken for a company there. Next move is back to Dubai. What's happening?
Yeah, I fly to Dubai now in an hour. And then on Sunday, I go to Vegas. I'm speaking at the Four Seasons in Vegas on Monday.
Nice.
Cisco's Top 190 Exco. And then I fly to Jacksonville and I do a 3-hour workshop for a very large insurance company. And then I fly, I think, back to Dubai. And then I go to Zurich to work with another insurance company. And then I go to Dominican Republic, which I've never been to, which I'm really looking forward to. So I event in Dominican Republic. And then I go to Bashar. I'm going to go watch Bashar live. If anybody listening to this podcast doesn't know Bashar is, it's kind of a weird story, but you'll find Bashar online if you look him up. I've been listening to Bashar for the last 15 years or so. And he's doing a full day lecture in New York. So I'm spoiling myself for my birthday to go and watch Bashar on New York and then back to Zurich and Monaco to do another event. So yeah, zigzagging across the world, loving it. Taking a bit of strain with jet lag, I can't lie. I've been up since 3. It is a bit tough, but it's one of the small...
I guess there's only so much you can do, you know, like if you're traveling across one time zone, you can prep yourself. But if you're traveling across multiple time zones all the time, there's actually like, what do you do? Like, how do you, can't really adjust your sleep patterns or anything ahead of time. You can just keep your body healthy and that's kind of the best that you can hope
that's
for.
That's the only thing you got to do. You got to keep your body healthy. Yeah? That's really what I've been focusing on, you know, what I'm eating, what I'm doing. I've like created like a nice kit for myself to make sure that I keep my health up.
Okay.
But yeah, really good, eh? Yeah, just loving it, having a great time. I'm really enjoying it. I'm having a great time moving so much. But I always love going back to Dubai, and I've just seen the wars kind of kicking off again. Anyway, but I'm flying back in. I don't care. I'm flying for a few days. And you, what's up with you?
Yeah, good. No, good. Running a leadership lab session tomorrow, next week, flying down for Verve Clicquot. Doing the adjudication again. It's my fourth year being involved with Verve Clicquot.
Fourth year, yeah.
Yeah, so
fourth
really
year,
cool.
The token white guy. Are there any other white guys there now? Are you still the token white guy?
Still the token white guy.
you're the only white guy there at the whole event.
But it's been really cool to have been involved with the brand. And I actually just started off being a panelist for one of their discussions. And I was actually the substitute like panelist because one of my friends couldn't make it. So he put me forward. And since then, it's just been this awesome relationship. Yeah. And then like hopefully speaking in Australia in August or New Zealand in August, still to be confirmed. Yeah. So like, yeah, hopefully doing some more international traveling soon as well. But listen, onto the pod. And let's chat about a few different interesting stories that have come out in the past week or so. The first one that I actually wanted to bring up is Meta currently has this build AI and then you're fired moment. So here's what it means. A Meta employee who helped build an internal AI tool was laid off 2 weeks later. So after the company pushed thousands of workers into AI-focused roles, they are cutting jobs in a major restructuring. The story went viral because it crystallizes a fear many leaders are triggering. They are pushing AI enthusiasm inside of the organization while simultaneously using AI as a cover for aggressive headcount reductions. I made a video about it earlier this week around like this idea of AI adoption because everyone wants AI adoption, but they aren't thinking about the narrative they are pushing at the start of the conversation. And it's such a huge part of how people perceive the world. So, you know, we look at the events that are happening in the world and we don't just react to those events. We react to the meaning that we assign to the events. And in organizations, a very large part of the meaning that we assign to events flow from leadership. They almost give you the narrative that you are going to follow. But then exactly to what Meta is doing right now, they say to people, we want you to adopt AI as quickly as possible. But then the narrative they're actually pushing is that we are going to cut a lot of jobs because of AI. So like what you end up in is like corporate hell for people, because if you build AI, then you are training your replacement. And if you don't build AI, then you are going to be irrelevant. And so that narrative traps people literally. I mean, it's corporate hell, dude. Like, can you think of a different way to describe that situation where you are literally damned if you do and damned if you don't?
Well, you're damned and you do, damned if you do and damned if you don't in the old structure. So the old structure is moving from hierarchy to intelligence, meaning that the messaging between people that used to make up organizations is being replaced by agents. In other words, it's time to move out and develop and understand that in the new paradigm and in the new rule sets, corporations won't exist in their current format. It's not something to take personally. It's something to understand that the technology is replacing the layering of communication and bureaucracy and making it super fast. And so what I think, it's a great invitation for you to realize that when you get squeezed out, or if the system that you're in makes less and less profit and your application of skill set is not like utilized well enough, it's time for you to start your own thing. And I keep hearing this, like the corporate hell, but the corporate structure is dying. So, and, you know, somebody was complaining about the Prime Minister of England. And what I think it's their sixth Prime Minister they've had in like, I don't know, so many years. And my response was, it's not the Prime Minister, bro. It's a system. The system is not working. It doesn't matter who you put in there. The system doesn't allow for movement. It's stuck. It's not at the leadership level. It's a systematic level. And what we are describing here is that the system itself is changing. That means the players inside it and the value they added is not applicable anymore. And so I think that when you only see your reality based on this one linearity of the way that you've been trained, well, welcome. This is what it means to change eras. This is what it's a paradigm shift. Is you doing something new? It's not you doing what you always did and now it's not work. Well, that's the point. Of course, it's not going to work. So I don't really, I made a post the other day that I'm tired of sad stories. and I said, yeah, some victims will take offense. But this is a sad story. It's like, yes, but the paradigm shifted. Guess what? Can I say something? I was terrible at the corporate game. Terrible. I couldn't do it. But when I finished school, that was almost the only avenue I thought I had. Entrepreneurship wasn't really the avenue. Corporate was. I was terrible at corporate. So I had to now define something new. You have had in the corporate world 200 years of easy, systematic processes for you to follow. That system is dead. It's dying and it's dead now. So you have to evolve. So welcome to it. I don't think it's corporate hell. I think it's the beginning of entrepreneurship that you need to take on board.
I agree with you. But for me, leadership still has to take accountability and responsibility for the narrative that they push. So I think your focus is heavily on the individual.
How do you?
Like you're saying, as individuals, take accountability.
No, but how do you as a lead? I was watching Darius from the CEO of Uber, right? And they were asking him, what do you think about driverless cars? What do you want him to say? Like, what are you expecting him to say? Yes, all our drivers will be null and void in 3 years. He can't say that. He can't say that. He has to keep some level of stability, something. But the truth is, within 2 to 3 years, there's going to be no drivers at Uber.
I think that's possible. But like, to what extent are there going to be no drivers? You know, where are there going to be no drivers? Because if we look at America, maybe a few states have Waymo integrated, like, you know, driverless cars.
No, they're rolling out cyber taxi next year to 12 cities. Okay. And Waymo's already now in like 8 cities.
Okay, but still, that's still like 12 cities in the US, like compared to across the world.
But all I'm saying is, what do you expect the CEO to say? What do you expect? It is going to be carnage. Do you expect them to say that?
I expect them to hold the fact that there's still a lot of uncertainty. And to invite people into the uncertainty and say, like, we don't know where this is going, but we are still like, you know, we're going to do the best for the people. I think that's the way to do it.
No, like, we're not. No, but they're not. They've never done the best for the people there, Eric.
I'll give you two examples. So one was there's a company called Evri, Every is a AI native company and built for AI, around AI, a company that has automated every single thing that it can automate. And the CEO came out and he said, despite this, we need more people than ever because we can't just... So that narrative, how do you think that narrative lands for the people in the company? They don't feel like if I take on AI, it's going to replace me. They see that there's this augmentation that is happening or that they are building side by side. The CEO of Goldman Sachs, which for me is a bit of a controversial one, I guess, in a way, because Goldman Sachs has never been necessarily seen in the most positive light. But he also came out and he said he doesn't think that all of the job cuts that the guys are predicting are going to happen, because when we have more sophisticated tools, it actually increases the complexity. And of course, AI is great at handling that complexity, but there's also some level of sense-making that needs to happen for which you might need humans. So all I'm saying is, I fully agree with your point that AI is changing the system. There's no doubt about it. Like, we create our tools and our tools create us. So yes, I agree that's happening. And I agree that there's a...
But I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree there's a responsibility on you as individual that, like, what are you going to do? But I also agree that leadership should take a responsibility for the vision of the future that they are painting. And if you say to people, train your AI replacement, or we're going to fire you, or like, if you don't use it, then we're going to fire you. I think you're just putting people into a survivalist mindset and they can't be creative and open from that space of view. Like,
no, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's true. I get what you're saying. I don't disagree, but eventually you have to take on the responsibility for yourself.
You must, for sure.
Whatever they're doing, whatever Mark's doing, whatever Meta's doing, whatever Every's doing, it's time now for taking self-responsibility and building something on your own, you know? I just think that's the era we're in right now. You've got the tools, you've got the access to information. There's so many courses you can do to set things up on your own. You don't have to be in corporate hell. You don't have to be. That's an old concept.
I was actually speaking to a lady about 2 weeks ago, and she's like 52. She used to work in corporate. Then she didn't like what she was doing. She switched to like some B2B SaaS company. She worked there for a while, ended up not liking that. And then started playing with like her own AI tools. And now she's built 3 AI tools using Claude Code. Not a programmer, not a technical background at all. She's built 3 AI tools, very specific use cases for each one. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I have a slightly like more technical understanding of some of these things. So I was like pushing her a little bit on what have you actually done? Like, is it being hosted? Like, where is it being hosted? All that kind of stuff. She was firing it all off. She was like sorted.
Awesome.
And she's the perfect example, you know, that what you need to be doing right now, what you need to be good at is spotting the problem and then connecting it to the tool.
Yes.
But for that, you need to go and play with the tool. It actually ties in nicely to one of the other stories I found, which is that Google's new AI agents and the sleep while it plans narrative. So Google is rolling out a new Spark agent that can autonomously plan tasks like parties or projects, reinforcing the narrative that AI is shifting from chatbot to proactive agents, like what you were saying, changing that systematic layer. It focuses on the trade-off between convenience and cost and what it means for knowledge work if offloading orchestration becomes normal. So like you are no longer just chatting to AI, asking it questions. It's actually getting involved in...
It's orchestrating you.
The entire rollout.
It's directing you. Yeah. I was listening to an interview the other day and they said that what's going to happen is that shopping is going to be done for you. You're not going to shop. It's going to have packages waiting for you when you get home based on what you saw, what you heard, what you said. And it's going to pick things for you and then you can choose and then say no or yes or whatever the case may be. So even the process of shopping starts to happen in an ambient, intelligent way and starts to happen seamlessly around you. And I would imagine just like traffic lights will be engaged with each other and the car to create that flow so that cars and traffic lights can be more in sync with each other using AI, we'll start to see that with travel and shopping and coordination with friends. And like, for example, I was just speaking to my friend Mark, and he messaged me this morning, and he lives literally, I don't know, 5 kilometers from where my hotel. And I would have loved to have seen him, but I totally forgot that he lives so close. And my agent would make that sort of suggestion to me, you know? It's like, look, you know, I know you like Mark, and he's, you know, he's close by, and he's doing this, and this is what he's doing on socials. So I think that orchestration of our lives will start to have this sort of intimate relationship with the agents that we're bringing on at the moment. So it's a very exciting, it's very exciting, eh? To have that sort of help, that intelligence.
Tell me, to what extent are you using AI? Like, what tools are you playing with?
Nothing. And I was telling my friends the other night is, I've done this thing in one of my talks where there's 7 layers of AI. And it's all the way from I'm planting blueberries, I don't want to care about technology, all the way to AI native first businesses, one person, multiple organizations, and right away through. And it's funny because I was telling my friends last night or the night before dinner, I was saying, I now realize what these things can do, but I don't see any problem I want to solve yet. I haven't found the problem I want to solve. And it's such a niche that I want to go and look for that problem, and it hasn't arrived. And what I've done is I've gone right to growing blueberries because I've said, okay, well, if AI is coming at this pace, I'm going to tap out of the AI game. I'm going to tap into the food distribution and hotel game because I don't think that's going to change. And then wait and see and look for any solution that I then can utilize a Claude idea for. I haven't found that yet, you know? So, yeah, so it's funny because, I mean, I speak about it a lot, but I haven't really utilized it for anything specific. Yeah.
Well, likely, actually, the way that you end up utilizing AI is into your, like, blueberry businesses, you know? Like, it might not be the solution for, like, a big AI. Because, so, a few weeks ago, I had this idea that it would be great to go onto Instagram, download a video, and then have AI analyze it for me and tell me like what was good, what can be improved. So I ended up like putting this thing into Claude, and dude, it spun up this proper app, like pulls my 5 latest Instagram videos. I click on one, analyzes the whole thing against frameworks from like Alex Ormosi and Callaway and all these big creators.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is really cool. I can't believe no one has done this. At this point, there's probably like 20 companies that have done this. You know, it's like, this is part of the challenge. Like, you have this idea.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's no moat. Like, the moat has become...
There's no moat. Brother, you hit the nail on the head. Anything with AI and tech, your moat is minimal and your roadmap is minimal.
Yeah.
So whatever solution you're thinking about in 3 weeks... Solutions.
It's gone.
It's a null and void. Exactly. Yeah. So
I think that's why the moat here is distribution and probably like personal brand, that kind of thing. Because anyone can build it. Anyone can build it. I was so enthused. I was like, maybe I should turn this into a product. And then literally now, like I've just seen so many guys come out, fully build solutions. The thing is, I could go and build that solution as well. But then where do you get the distribution? That is actually the thing. It's like, where do you get the distribution?
That's what it is. Exactly. Because all my friends on Clawbots are building apps, but nobody's buying the app. Like, yeah, I built this app. Okay, who's you engaging with it? Nobody. Okay, well, that's now there's a gazillion apps sitting on all these shadow app stores.
I think that is actually the biggest trap. That's the biggest trap because... It feels so good to be building with it and to see your ideas come to life.
Yeah, for nothing.
But that's the easiest part of this thing. And it's always been the easiest part of entrepreneurship. It's like, do the new thing and get it up and running. But then to go and sell it, totally different story.
Totally different story. I mean, let me tell you, just with like Velvet Harvest, dude, we haven't even got our samples out yet because the box is not right. Just the box. We have had weeks of back and forth with the box. And what's on the box and what should be on the box, and then speaking to consultants, and then the foil is not deep enough engraved in the box. And then We haven't even started the game, bro. Like I'm still prepping to get into the game. These things take forever.
But I mean, that's also it's to my point. You know, you've probably used AI for all those touch points with Velvet Harvest.
We have.
Yeah,
we have. You're right.
So I think it does sometimes create a bit of pressure for people to feel like, oh, they need to know all the latest tools and like, you know, all the implementations and all the automations, but you can't keep up with all of it. So the best place to start is probably just to look at what you're already doing and see where does it slot into what you're already doing, and then start understanding the AI world a little bit so that you can connect the problem to the tool when it arrives. But then, like we've been saying, know that connecting the problem to the tool is just a small part of the actual thing that you need to get right.
You need to become
a marketer. Like, that's actually what you need to be good at.
Yeah. Look, I mean, personal brand and distribution, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think whatever you create and how quickly can you distribute it and how quickly can you monetize it? And then, you know, that becomes the key.
All right. I have two more stories for us that I wanted to quickly chat about. So the first one is, I don't know if you saw Ferrari's new car that came out this week.
Terrible.
Dude.
Like a dinky car. You know, it looks like a Pinocchio car. Looks like a Pinocchio car.
What were they thinking?
That's so bad for a Fiat, let alone a Ferrari. Jesus. I mean, did you see this Fiat sports car they brought out? It's unbelievable.
I didn't.
They launched it the same day.
Really?
The Fiat one is fantastic. Yeah, okay.
So for everyone who doesn't know, Ferrari unveiled Luce, which is their first all-electric model. And it literally wiped out, I think, something like $8 billion off of Ferrari's stock price.
Market share.
Because everyone just absolutely hates it. It looks nothing like a Ferrari. I think dinky car is probably a good description of it. And what makes this pretty interesting to me is that the designer in charge of this project was Jony Ive.
Yeah.
The designer that gave us the iPhone.
Yeah.
The guy who's been heading up Apple's designs for years and years and years. So, did you see that one meme where they're like, how are you going to charge the Ferrari? And then it's flipped upside down with the...
Yes, like a mouse.
The like charger at the bottom of the car.
all the so other memes funny. Where everybody, some guy starts driving and he gets out the other side and he's gay. They all get out and they're gay. Like a husband gets into it, arrives home, and he gets out in this like very fancy, flamboyant outfit, and he tells his son, "I'm gay now." And what was his name? Also, the Formula One driver also gets out to the other side. He's like, "Okay, guys, I'm gay. Now I'm gay." I think they hit a miss. The price tag is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous price tag compared to what China's giving you.
$600,000. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a ridiculous price tag when China's giving you cars for $40,000. That almost probably as quick. $45,000, let's say. Let's say $100,000. You're talking about a sixth of the price. You think Ferrari still holds that value? No, I don't think it does. No, I think you're mistaken. That's a big mistake.
It's very similar to what Jag did. Remember when they brought out that sort of like heavily weird concept car?
I thought the Jag was sexier though. Yeah, but it was sexy at least. It was like it had something. It was talking like it was brave. I think this is like, you know what it is? Is Jony Ive lives in San Francisco. You know, the San Franciscans are very like edgy. And like, yeah, I think he lives in a bubble, you know? I think maybe the rest of us will catch up to it.
I think what you're saying actually makes a lot of sense because if I think of the car, it actually has a very tech vibe to it.
And also understated. Very understated. Like, I'm not trying to show off, which is what San Francisco is about. You know, you don't go show off all your money. You keep it very understated and very edgy.
Yeah. But it completely lacks legacy and history and like edginess.
Sexy,
like that Ferrari,
it's
like
not sexy.
Beautiful, like, you know.
No, it's not sexy. No, it's not sexy.
Yeah. Dude, I think you've actually nailed it. You've nailed it. It's like, this is a tech bro sitting in a coffee shop in San Francisco versus like an Italian dude dressed up in a suit, sipping an espresso in Italy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference. Exactly. Like, that's what they missed.
That guy in San Francisco can't get into a normal Ferrari. It doesn't look good for him, you know? So he's built a car for himself.
Good analysis. I like that. Listen, last story that I wanted to quickly chat about is SpaceX's IPO.
IPO. Yeah.
So SpaceX is listing on the stock market, and they are trying to do it at a valuation of $1.75 trillion, which actually, remember there was a time when crossing the $1 trillion mark was like a big thing, and we were going to see who's going to do it first. It was Apple.
Yeah,
I think it was Apple, followed by Microsoft. And then now, if they IPO at $1.75 trillion, they will be the ninth biggest company. Ninth. So it's insane. It's, you know, you break that record and all of a sudden everything just floods in.
All the power in the world to him. He deserves it.
Dude.
He's a machine.
Have you seen his compensation package?
Yes. Take us through it.
But he
has to get a million people on Mars. Million people on Mars. what? A million people.
He has a compensation bonus tied to the IPO. He has to meet two criteria to unlock it. He has to get the company to a valuation target of $7.5 trillion and then successfully place a million human inhabitants on Mars. And what that means, so the math of it is that you have to launch 1,000 starships during a specific planetary alignment window that only opens every 26 months. And each ship has to transport roughly 1,000 passengers. And if he fails to do this, then he doesn't get those shares that are tied to his bonus.
I mean, I take my hat off to that guy, eh? What an interesting guy, bro. We're so lucky to be watching him doing what he does. He's changing our world, you know? And in Dubai, I have friends that are very anti-Israel. And then Israel came in and partnered with Dubai to protect Dubai. And I always think to myself, what do you think about Israel now? Now that you're safe because of Israel. And I think the same thing with Elon Musk is because people like to hate Elon Musk. So don't use Starlink. Make sure you never use an electric car. Make sure that you don't do anything to do it. Don't do anything that Elon Musk, because if you don't like him, he's touching every part of your life, bro. Every part of your life. You can't actually get away from not having influence by this guy. And so all the hate, but are still utilizing. Because, I mean, look, in America, let me tell you, Teslas are everywhere. Like everywhere. It's like I think they're the top selling car again. Like Model Y was the top selling car again. So, I mean, there's no stopping this guy, you know? And I think it's a huge privilege to watch him do what he does. And is he human? Yeah. Yes. And does he have his shadow side? Yes. Does he have Asperger's? Yes. Does he not give a shit what you think? Yes. All of those things are brilliant. Brilliant. The best entrepreneur we've ever had. And he's only just getting started. So, you know, I'm so amazing. Happy for him. I want to invest in him. I bought so many Tesla shares. I hold more Tesla shares than any other company. So, I think it's just energetically for me, you know, it's like energetically, I want to say, good, bro. Like, you're giving it horns, bro. And you know what's so funny? The guy who's written that book about him now, he's been on an interview tour of the podcast. And they were laughing because they were saying, so what's his morning routine? He doesn't have one. He gets up and goes. No meditation, no green juice, no tapping, no breath work. Get up and go. It's like, and they were saying he's in a constant knife fight. So gets up, takes his knife and looks for the nearest fight that he has to have. Goes in, has that fight, flies to the next fight, flies to the next flight. And he says he watches jets. He's just zigzagging the world because he goes to the problem. He flies straight to the problem, fixes the problem, moves to the next problem, next problem, next problem. I mean, he's relentless.
He is good relentless.
Boy. Yeah. Good boy.
I watched a very interesting video on him this week where they were sort of documenting his rise. And like one of the things I've always loved by what he says is that you shouldn't just find problems to fix, but you should be inspired, like wake up and like want to just do things. Yeah. And that was a big part of his mission to Mars. It wasn't necessarily like save the world, but it's like, we can also just do cool things and have like, you know, fun along the way. But the video was quite interesting in that they were saying, you know, when Elon Musk came on the scene initially, everyone was rooting for him. Like he was beloved, you know? And when you look at those early interviews, he had a humility to him and a sincerity. Like you watch him do those interviews and he's almost like crying. Like they talked to him about his past. Yeah, we grew up in a very tough situation. And he talks about the first time making money. He talks about like they were trying to rent an apartment, but apartments were too expensive and office space was actually cheaper. So he rented office space, stayed in the office, and then shouted the YMCA. Yeah. Talks about all these things. And you can see when he talks about it, and there was also this one moment where some of the astronauts had some commentary about SpaceX. Yeah. And you look at him and he's like, he's almost teary about it.
No, he is tearing up about it. Because his heroes and were talking shit about him.
Right? Yeah. So at that point in time, everyone was rooting for him because he was this very sincere entrepreneur building towards something. And then around 2016, it changes and he becomes this like very flippant entrepreneur. He gets on stage and like, remember at some point people were boycotting when he just bought over Twitter, they were boycotting the advertising and he was swearing at the advertisers on stage. And they say that at that moment, he starts losing people's votes because he goes from the sincere entrepreneur to like this power hungry kind of guy. And in research, it actually says that as your power increases, your empathy decreases. And that's sort of the same trajectory that he went on, is that the more power he gained, and he's unchallenged. I mean, he's at the top, you know, and you can imagine at that point in time, everyone is sort of in your inner circle, they're singing your praises. And if they're not singing your praises, they're external to you, then, well, like you just go to war with them and you have the means to do so. And so they were saying like, power increases, empathy decreases, and it's almost always the case. There's almost no exception to that rule. So it was interesting for me to see that.
Look, I find the same with myself.
That journey that he's been on.
I've lost interest.
Well, I mean, the rule should hold true, right?
Yeah, but I have lost interest in people that are, you know what? I almost think it's like when you have proven to yourself that you can achieve X, Y, and Z, you almost get irritated with people not seeing that for themselves to a certain extent. And what they are is desperate for you to give them something or show them some way, but you realize that it's actually all within yourself. And I also realized that when he started to get bigger and bigger and bigger, other people were starting to challenge him. So you had to now move away from sincerity to a lion. He couldn't continuously stay sincere. I think that is also an unfair expectation on him, you know. When you start to become the lion of the jungle, you have to start defending your territory. On your way up to the rise of the lion, you're playing a different game. But when you arrive at lionship, I don't know. I think it's like I saw something funny the other day. It said this little kid was asking his dad, are we Democrats or Republican? And he says, we're currently Democratic and we're saving up to be Republicans. And it's funny because what that says is that the richer you get, the less empathy you have, right? And what it seems as though is that Democratic people haven't become as successful financially as the Republicans. And so what they want to do is they want to share it amongst everybody. The Republicans have made the money themselves. They don't want to share it. And so now what happens is that, yes, it is that thing, the more power, less empathy. That's such an interesting stat. I feel that. And I always question myself. I'm like, why am I like that? But I think my patience levels have changed with people. My level of patience and putting up with something. Like I had a bit of a tiff with the MC yesterday. He was a bit derogatory. And I said to him, I beg your pardon. And we had a bit of a tiff. But I've also become very sensitive with the fact that somebody joking around. Like, why are you not I'm respectful to you. And so that those little digs, I don't stand for them. You know, I immediately was like, what are you saying? And I think it's that, you know, is it lacking empathy? Is it having more self-respect? Is it seeing victims for who they are? I don't know. I think it's an interesting conversation to have, you know, because it's a very interesting.
It is interesting. I think you can still have empathy and have very solid boundaries, or you can still have empathy and still pick your fights. One of the examples I used was, And by the way, like I like Elon Musk, right? Like I think he's doing cool things. I don't agree with everything he does, as in most cases.
As you shouldn't.
But like one of the things that he did, the things he did was there was that big cave rescue that happened.
Yes.
Where 12 miners,
Mexican,
I think, got stuck
somewhere.
In a cave. Yeah. And he kind of inserted himself into the situation without them needing him. And he flew over or amazing, the fact that he would build a submarine to go into the cave to help, whatever.
Yeah.
And all the guys who were leading it were like, dude, like, we don't, that's not what we need. But he kept insisting that this is the thing that you need. And so afterwards, like he was using, and this is where I, you know, what I don't like is that he used his power and his influence to take on small guys who were just trying to do their best. Yeah. And he was painting them in a bad light. And yeah. And that to me, that's not you picking a fight. That's you just being a bully. So that to me is where I think that empathy like breaks
and, you
down.
You know, it must be a real big thing to have that much money and power.
I can't, I mean,
it's
we
like
can't.
Presidents of countries, you're more powerful than them.
Yeah.
And you got more money than countries. Like, I mean,
his net worth is currently $700 billion, dude.
Yeah, what do you think?
$700 billion.
Isn't that bigger than, like, I don't know, countries? How many countries would go inside that?
No, definitely. Definitely.
I mean, that's like a, that's a hell of a thing to, I mean, he wants to fight with George Soros because George Soros is funding all the woke movements, apparently. And he was saying on Twitter, I'll buy him four times over. I don't care. I was like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah, I guess you could. Yeah, I guess you could. Yeah. Yeah, and he can't say anything.
Well, I mean, it is the guy who said, I'll buy Twitter, and then just bought Twitter. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, look, I guess your ego, I mean, people have egos with much less than that. I mean, with that amount of
for sure.
power and movement,
for sure.
I guess, yeah. And you think you know everything, I guess. Interesting. Well, that was a good episode, Errico. Nice to be chatting again with you. And thank you for bringing
thank
up those
brother.
Stories. One story that I heard the other day, which I thought was pretty interesting, is that AGI has already been already arrived with the advent of Claude releasing Mythos a little while back. Was it called Mythos?
Mythos, yeah.
And Andreessen Horowitz, yeah, was speaking on Joe Rogan. And he said, well, that was AGI. That's what happened. It's self-learning system, self-fixing itself, you know, that's agentic thinking and now into AGI. And he's like, oh, it already happened and nobody even really said anything about it. And he was one person who said it. And then on Moonshots, they also said it. It's like AGI happened like a few weeks ago and nobody's actually even realized that it's happened. And so, yeah, we are already on the other side of the threshold and it's going to start to roll out now. And I think we're going to see some really, really unbelievable discoveries and collapses all at the same time. Like the discoveries around health, and you've seen all these bots are better at trading. So like even the changes to trading and what are you buying, and then also the demise of organizations overnight. It's a wow. The next couple of years are gonna be grab your popcorn and get ready.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, do you know when Mythos is coming out? Like because they're gonna make it publicly available at some point, right?
I imagine. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm listening to Moonshots, that's kind of the latest information I have access to. They haven't said anything there.
Okay. Yeah. I think you summed it up well. We are in for a lot of change and the destruction of a lot of the things that we used to hold dear.
Yeah, both. They're going to be both happening at the same time. Yeah, yeah. The discoveries are going to be unbelievable.
Yeah. Destruction and you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you everybody for joining us in this week's Expansive Podcast. It was so good to have you with us. And yeah, we love doing these and we love sharing the latest ideas around them. And until next week, please stay expansive, stay curious, open your heart and just explore the world around you. It is a huge privilege to be alive over this period of time. There's so much going on. We're seeing the bump of and change of dramatic structures, everything from geopolitics to financial to health and physical. And, you know, as I always say, aliens are going to land and to the advent of that starting to happen. I was saying that at a conference the other day and the audience was like, what? I'm like, yeah, definitely next year it's going to happen. I'm like,
choose your audience.
I thought, geez, that guy's crazy. Crazy audience. But until next week, stay expansive. Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.